On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we take a look back at the big stories of 2019. From the Bonin scandal to property tax reform to election integrity, we look at those stories and all the little stories that foreshadowed them. Well, it's a new year. Welcome back to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 Studios in Austin, Texas. For this week, I wanted to do something a little different. I've got Brandon Waltons, managing editor for Texas Scorecard. I've got Destin Sinsky, your capital correspondent. I wanted to look back on the previous year, talk about some of the big stories that happened in Texas this year, and folks, you should be familiar with these, maybe not fully familiar, but unpack these stories and actually talk about some of the little things that we were able to cover in 2019 that kind of informed and led up to these big events. And so I wanted to start off, let's start with this huge story, the giant scandal involving Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin.
Yeah.
Brandon, for those who in real and not paying attention, tell folks kind of, let's give them a thumbnail sketch. But I want to then talk about some of the things that kind of maybe indicated that this scandal might be coming.
Well, this Bonin scandal, right, involving Texas Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin. I mean, this was probably the story of the year. If you looked at Texas politics, the short of it is that you had Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin, who was a new speaker who came in, was sworn in as speaker in January, had a session that a lot of folks called a purple session. Well, afterwards, he meets with Empower Texan CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan for a backroom meeting where he tries to create this offer of actually media credentials in exchange for the political targeting of certain Republican House members. Now, Michael records that meeting. He goes out there with the recording, and members turn against him, and ultimately public pressure forces Bonin to not seek re-election. So there's going to be a new speaker, but that was probably the big story, certainly during the summer and the fall of 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this big event, you know, normally in the past, we've seen these speakers serve session over session, year over year. I mean, we had Strauss from basically a decade, Craddock for three sessions, and here we got this guy, Bonin, been around in the legislature forever, comes in, one term, boom, immediately gone.
Immediately he shoots himself in the foot.
Totally. I mean,
basically.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There was actually some indication of this. I mean, we had seen him in previous sessions, you know, be a little kind of emotionally unstable, like getting fights with legislators, just kind of seemed to have a temper, kind of a little bit of... He's an impulsive guy. You see that kind of thing.
I would say that there's a parallel or a story that precedes this one, and that is the engagement between the speaker and Chris McNutt, who works for Texas Gun Rights. And so what unfolded was essentially Bonin throwing somebody under the bus under the pretense of completely false allegations, and that is what leads Michael and his version of the story to say, hey, I better have a back, you know, I need to watch my own back as I go into this, because it might be the only other account of what happens inside unfolds.
And that's right, and there was a recording there. Now, granted, I mean, nobody paid attention to the recording, but let's talk about this situation. We covered all of this with Texas Scorecard, but you had McNutt, who's working on the constitutional carry issue, trying to move this bill through the legislature to say, hey, we want to allow people, Texans, if you're constitutionally allowed to own a gun, you should be constitutionally allowed, as you are, to carry a gun. And they're working on this issue. It's being completely stifled by Bonin, of course, actually by Poncho, Panic Button Poncho Navarez.
We'll talk about
one story at a time.
That's another big story of the year. You know, you have this situation where they're moving this bill, the bill's being killed in the legislature, and McNutt's out there talking to people on the streets in legislators' neighborhoods.
Yeah. And I'll talk about this real quick.
This is
something that a lot of our listeners will understand. Anybody that's ever worked on a campaign, volunteered for a political effort of any type, sort, or category, has gone door-to-door to talk to their neighbors about whatever issue or candidate is important to them. He's literally handing out flyers to people in the House district of a few of these representatives that sit on these chairs that are chairman of certain committees, right?
Sure.
And everybody knows that that's something as old as politics.
Yeah.
And
try and tell the constituents in the neighborhood of the guy who has control over the bill.
And Bonin is not a fan of the leverage that is building in the grassroots for this issue, which has been a priority of the Republican Party of Texas as long as we've had priorities for the legislature. And so he says, hey, this guy is coming to my house while he knows I'm in Austin and intimidating my family.
And he comes out. He goes like, oh, man, this guy came to my door. He threatened my family. He's waving his gun around. I mean, they come out with all these things. And that's the story. They define the story that way up front. Mm-hmm. And the problem was it's just a total lie.
No, it is a total lie. Now, if you would kind of watch Bonin and watch his behavior before in past sessions, like you said, he served in the House for a while. And if you knew Chris McNutt and a lot of folks in the grassroots community, especially very familiar with the work that he had been doing, the whole story sounded a little odd, but it seemed like a really big allegation for a Speaker of the House to make, especially if it wasn't true. Well, you fast forward a few days, about a week or so, and then you get the footage, the body cam footage released by the DPS officers that are stationed in Bonin's neighborhood who show in this video that you have Chris McNutt basically having an interaction with them. He never goes to the door. He never makes it, you know, to their driveway.
Not only does he not threaten the wife, I think it actually turns out she isn't even there. But I mean,
he has a very intercept
him a block away or something.
Yeah,
and he hands the flyer to a DPS officer who politely says, man, I'll just do it. I'll put it up there for you. No problem.
Yeah.
I'll leave one on the door for you.
And so the fact's completely contrary. This is actually the event that, you know, Michael Quinn Sullivan says, hey, this is the reason why I felt like I needed to record this meeting.
And at the time this happened, I think, you know, maybe it was just part of it was the timing of where we were in session. Part of it was the desire on a lot of folks to try to at least have some sort of goodwill or hope for the best, maybe with Speaker Bonin. But you had this story happen and you had it really ignored by lawmakers for the most part.
Sure. I mean, despite this big provable lie in preceding the other giant big provable lie that ends up happening. Other more emotional and stable, kind of tied in with the McNutt issue, is whenever Bonin storms out of the GOP spring legislative dinner. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. That followed this whole situation, right? You had the, I think it was the Republican Party of Texas holding this fundraiser dinner event in Austin, the sort of thing where lawmakers attend, statewide leaders attend, Republican Party officials attend, and of course, donors tend to buy tables, invite folks that they know. And you had a situation really right after this Chris McNutt encounter, quote unquote, you had a situation where Chris McNutt was sitting at a table. He was at the event. Bonin was there. He was scheduled to speak. And Bonin essentially goes up to him and starts yelling at him, starts this altercation to which, you know, the accounts of the people that are there, like, was very one-sided. It was him doing this. And then he ultimately storms out. He was supposedly scheduled to speak to the room. I mean, again, these are people who spent a lot of money to hear from the Republican officials at this donor event.
Traditionally, you'd think, hey, this is a Republican speaker, new Republican speaker. He should want to get in front of this room full of donors.
He storms out. And again, it just shows this very rash, this very in-the-moment emotional
reaction
sort of reaction that Bonin has. And ultimately, as we know, it was that sort of lack of thinking things through that really ultimately got him in the end.
Well, and tying in also another big story that we covered right at the end of the legislative session that went and tied into this issue with, you know, the meeting between Bonin and Sullivan. He comes out at the end of the session very confusingly. We're looking at the session and we're saying, hey, look, we're looking at the next election cycle. Democrats are coming to the state. It's going to be highly competitive. Republicans are trying to hold the House. And he comes out and says, hey, Republicans, don't campaign against Democrats in the House. And everybody's going, what? Why are you telling them to do that? Very, you know, it's like this doesn't make any sense.
Kumbaya, Tony. The word du jour for the 86th legislative session. You know, it's like a fraternity, right? I mean, they want to build this culture. They want to double down on a culture that is all about camaraderie and, you know, friendship building, and everybody's on the same team and we can all help each other come back and all this stuff. And if we just all cover for one another, everything will be fine and dandy. But here's the thing is the people that elect these folks into office don't think like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's completely antagonistic to most Texans.
I think my point is they don't think like it either because it was a sham.
Well,
you know,
right.
You have the meeting and they go, well, we're only saying that. We're saying that you shouldn't campaign against each other. But in reality, in private, we're going to offer this illicit quid pro quo deal. You know, here, go do this bidding. Go. We'll pretend that we're a club and we're all friendly. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, they are, certainly. Right. But we're going to want to pretend that. But then we really want to kind of do stuff.
So the ultimate motivation
is totally weird.
To, you know, not have these very combative primaries where conservatives and moderate Republicans are clashing with one another so that we can focus on November next year. Right. And so if you tell all these conservative folks who really care about the Republican primary and having the Republican that they want to pass their priorities when legislative session comes, you know, instead, the powers that be up in the House and the people that have, you know, very close ties to the lobby and can fundraise and do all those things have, you know, basically, you know, can run roughshod in the Republican primary and get off easy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the ultimate end goal.
Well, and maybe it's a switcheroo, right? Hey, don't campaign against us in the primary, except maybe you can campaign against these guys who I don't really like, you know, push you here, but don't campaign against any of us. Oh, well, then are they really going to hold the Democrats to the fire? And, you know, I don't know. I don't really, you know, they're kind of like, hey, trust me. Trust me. I'm going to do this. So maybe it really is about the kumbaya, the camaraderie, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. All right. Well, let's take a really quick break. And when I come back, I want to talk about the property tax issue, which was obviously, I mean, from the start, this was the number one issue for the year. And you know, it kind of was, but definitely informed a lot of things. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back and talk about that.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
All right, now we're back. Let's talk about the property tax issue. So you have, we're, you know, talking about Bonin, but also the governor, other Republican leaders come out at the beginning of 2019 and they say, hey, this is going to be a major issue. We're going to do something about this property tax issue. And, you know, all of us are going, well, maybe we're going to get something hopefully done. And some things did pass. Mm-hmm. But I think there were these kind of things that we were missing or at least maybe weren't giving enough attention to. For example, mm-hmm. you had the revenue estimate. And this is the kind of thing like people don't pay attention to revenue. It's very boring, right? But you had the revenue estimate and it should have been, hey, there's a giant pile of money that you people should be giving back to me. Give me all of it. You know, give me tax. I'm the taxpayer here. Give me the entire pile of money back, right? And that was kind of missed over. And it told the story, then, I think, of what was to come.
Yeah, and so for the purpose of you know, simplifying this, you're right. So you have Glenn Hager, who's the comptroller, who comes out early on and says, you know, ahead of this legislative session, early on in the session, says, legislature's going to have some extra money to play around with, about $9 or $10 billion. And so so great. So a lot of folks on the conservative side of things started looking at that and said, well, that's a great place to start for property tax relief. After all, this is an issue that has been discussed discussed session after session is, yeah, how are we going to lower people's property taxes? One of the biggest issues Texas has,
totally
one of the biggest property
control.
Tax burdens.
Yeah, totally out of control property taxes here. And I mean, it's crazy. Like, we compare with states like New York and, you know, liberal states in terms of the property tax burden.
One of the biggest burdens. And so, great, we've got this extra money. Lawmakers are going to use this to hopefully buy down some of these local debts and maybe do something to actually lower Texans' tax bills in 2020. Well, as you can imagine, what you actually saw really early on is you saw a lot of politicians looking at a big bag of money, essentially, and looking at which pet cause they could throw this towards. And it became very, very clear early on in the session that it was going to be a big fight between property tax relief and more education spending.
Well, and that's what they wanted to talk about was, oh, we need to do school finance reform.
They say you can't do one without the other.
You can't do one without the other. And it was like, well, hold on. Reform means change. Mm-hmm. It's like, change into what? What are we going to change the system to? And what we ended up seeing was reform meant spend, right? Yeah. It was, you know, we're going to do school finance.
We're going to change the dollar amount.
We're going to change the dollar amount that's spent.
Yeah.
But you still have this crazy system that nobody can even, you know, wrap their minds around and explain. You'd think like, okay, you have so many kids, you get this many dollars per kids, or we're going to pay to operate the schools.
Yeah, but it's not at all.
You know, there's copper pennies and golden pennies. And here's, you know, you go up 10%, and if you go over, then we have Robin Hood and money gets taken. I mean, it's this completely insane system. And they went, yeah, let's double down on that, but we'll just spend more.
Yeah, that's the answer. And so meanwhile, taxpayers are looking at this and they're saying, okay, great. They're doing something with education. Maybe we don't really know what that is, but hold up. We sent you there. This is a Republican Party of Texas, you know, priority again and again, is we sent you there to do something for property taxes. And what we saw was as the session went on, especially into the middle of it, that amount that seemed to be there and open for this purpose kept sort of dwindling and getting cannibalized by this increased spending to increase teacher pay or in general just throw kind of more money at schools or otherwise continue this broken school finance system.
It was kind of like you had a Senate proposal. It was like, it's like, how do we throw money at the schools? Well, do we throw money at teacher salaries? Well, that's kind of better than just throwing it at the schools generally, but shouldn't this money be going to taxpayers?
The absurdity really reached its peak, though, right, is when you had the House and the Senate kind of fighting over how they were going to be able to do this. It really kind of started to look like, well, maybe we don't want to use any of this $9 billion. Maybe we don't want to use any of this excess revenue for property tax relief. So, okay, you had the big three. I'm talking about Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Speaker of the House Dennis Bonin, coming out and saying, well, here's the big plan. It's been a big secret, but here's the big idea we've had all session long, and that is that we're going to provide property tax relief by raising taxes, and specifically raising the sales tax. And this was something, I mean, this dog did not hunt. I mean, literally, this was a plan that was announced on a Friday, and it was dead on Monday.
Well, this is, so honestly, like, unpacking this catastrophe is really pretty funny. So these guys are on the Legislative Budget Board, okay, which is the internal bureaucrats who write the budget.
Right.
They're the numbers people in the legislature. And so, you know, Abbott, Patrick, Bonin, they command this army of number cruncher bureaucrats. And immediately, I mean, I'm talking like an hour after they announce that they want to raise sales taxes, the number crunching bureaucrats come out and say, hey, here's how this would work if we did it. And oh, yeah, by the way, this means a tax increase effectively for 3/4 of Texans.
Yes.
Yeah, because people pay sales tax.
And
it was like, did you guys not read your own paper before you announced this horrible
thing? They were so quick to roll out this great idea that they didn't wait to see if it had any legs whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, and the hero of that, there was Paul Bettencourt, state senator, kind of stood up and just said, no, I'm not going along with this.
Well, not just the state senator, but the chair of the Republican caucus in the Texas Senate, you know, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, like I said, all three statewide leaders were pretty much on board with this plan. But Patrick was specifically vocal and specifically strong about this is the way it has to be done. What you saw was you saw Senator Betancourt say, no, I don't think so. He sees these numbers. He sees even some polling that was actually done that shows that Texans were not behind a plan to raise the sales tax, really regardless of what it did
to raise taxes on three-quarters of Texas.
Really regardless of what effect it had on property taxes. And so you saw Senator Betancourt get together with his Republican members of the Senate and say, look, this is a plan that is going to be disastrous for us in the 2020 elections if we go through with this. I mean, after all, imagine Democrats who are the party, right, of tax and spend generally would have this great opportunity to paint Republicans as the tax raiser. So he goes in there with the Republican caucus in the Senate. He says, look, guys, this plan's not a winner. They ultimately agree with him. The Senate discards this. They find some alternate source of revenue for property tax relief, at least in their proposal, and they send it off to the House. Quickly, the House sees the writing on the wall. They kill this. None of the members really want to be on the record voting for this.
Sure.
And that was it. And this was something that happened over a matter of a few days.
What's funny is you kind of figured this out because you go to the signing ceremony. You figure out some elements of this.
Fast forward a little bit.
There's a signing ceremony on this, some of the property tax reform stuff that did pass.
Yeah.
And Betancourt, author of the bill,
Before he was even in the legislature.
Totally. Not invited to the signing ceremony for the bill. And I think, you know, y'all were reporting on it, and then eventually Betancourt kind of admitted it, right?
Well, he did,
They straight up didn't invite me because I fought him on this sales
tax. And it's just an example, right, of how petty some of the politics can really, really be in Austin. It's really amazing. The interesting thing being I think this was Betancourt's comment, but this bill signing in question happened on the same day as the meeting that we talked about earlier between Michael Quinn Sullivan and Dennis Bond. And Betancourt made a comment on his radio show in Houston that he was probably pretty glad, actually, that he wasn't in town for that day.
He wasn't in town.
Not to beat a dead horse here, but I think one of the things that we kind of glossed over was Betancourt's willingness to stand up on his own, because most of the rank-and-file folks, Republicans, in either chamber were ready to kind of bite the bullet and do this if they had to. And Betancourt, you know, put his neck out there and said, hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it took a little bit of work amongst his colleagues to say, guys, this is not going to be a good look. The 2020 Republican tax hike is going to be an awful slogan we don't want to be under.
Yeah, we don't want to be running for re-election in 2020 as the guys who raised your taxes, and which is just a terrible, platform to move forward on. Speaking of elections, I want to take a quick break and then come back and talk about election integrity, all the things that went on this year. And I think there's a lot of stories to unpack there and what they will tell us. Obviously, as we're starting this new year, it's a year dominated by elections. I think this is the third big issue of the year, maybe not given as much attention. We'll be back in a second.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. The 2020 election will be here before we know it, and with every election comes candidates that need to be vetted and tested before we can entrust them with our vote. At TFR, we take that vetting process seriously. Any candidate seeking our endorsement must first fill out a comprehensive questionnaire, then sit for an interview with our staff. We then seek input from each candidate's would-be constituents before making a decision. To find out more about our endorsement process and view which candidates have made the cut, visit EmpowerTexans.com/endorsements.
All right, now let's pick up with this last issue here, election integrity. There was a movement. I mean, it was a big move during the legislative session saying, hey, we need to do something to clean up our elections. I mean, and this is going back to 2018 and before that, where you were seeing all of these incidents go on where you're like, wait a second, nobody's really counting the votes. Well, I mean, nobody's actually ensuring, like, hey, you know, if there's voters, there's 1,000 voters, there should be 1,000 votes. And we kept seeing problems like that in elections. We had an effort to try and do something about that. It mainly fails.
Yes. And, you know, this stuff wasn't happening, by the way, just in any one area, but it was happening in the Rio Grande Valley. It was happening in Dallas and Fort Worth. And yeah.
Oh, the huge, you know, yeah. All these ballot harvesting scams going on in DFW.
Absolutely not an isolated incident. Again, a great opportunity we saw after Bonin was elected the speaker. A few weeks in, he announces his committee assignments. That's one of his big responsibilities in the first weeks of the session. And he appoints this elections committee in the House that is packed with people who you would think would be generally pretty conservative on this. I just off the top of my head, it was chaired by Stephanie Click, who had been the Republican Party chair in Tarrant County before.
Considered, was always considered kind of more conservative member, and you thought, hey, this is somebody who's going to take this seriously and maybe really do something.
Yeah, State Representative Briscoe Kane, you had Valerie Swanson, you had some others. Basically, you're looking at this and it's, wow, this is what bigger opportunity for election integrity legislation to pass than right now, because this committee is absolutely stacked with conservatives. At least that's how it appeared early on.
But as the session goes on, we start seeing these fights come up. I mean, there's vendor fights, there's other things going on. They don't really pass much of anything.
So the stuff in the House is basically, it's effectively dead two-thirds of the way through the session, and there's a huge package bill in the Senate, and this bill has, you know, policies that would address a multitude of the different grievances against our election integrity or our election system, right? And so everything kind of goes over to the other side, and before you know it, that bill's dead too. Election integrity is nowhere to be found. Where's the accountability? Everybody's kind of trying to hide it, but ultimately, it was a huge missed opportunity. This is something that the Republican Party Platform Committee and the Legislative Priorities Committee said was a huge issue. Big whiff on the part of Republicans atop both chambers.
So you don't have major legislative changes, but it's still like, okay, the problem is administration of our election systems. And so after the session, you see Governor Abbott come in and nominate, during the session.
During the beginning of the session.
Yeah, so the beginning of the session. You have David Whitley, who's the Secretary of State, nominated by Governor Abbott, goes out and starts actually trying to instruct people, like, hey, let's go clean up the voter rolls. I mean, because it's not, you know, look, there were these bills that would have reformed things, but there's also just common sense practices that could be implemented that would do a lot of reform. And these things going along, and it just kind of gets fumbled away.
Ugh, and it was really one of the most disappointing things, especially if you cared about election integrity, was watching this unfold.
And like everybody does. I mean, if you vote.
If you happen to care about such things, right? You had the Secretary of the State, newly appointed by Governor Abbott, come out and release this list, basically saying, we've got this amount of voters. I can't remember off the top of my head, but we've got this amount of voters that may have voted illegally. They're not.
It was a cross check.
DPS.
So if I remember, you basically had records that say, "Hey, we actually know who our non-citizens are."
Yeah.
Now, this wasn't illegal aliens, like people who are legal resident non-citizens. Those people are not allowed to vote.
Yeah.
And so if you do a cross-check and you say, hey, let's look at the voter rolls and let's look at the legal citizen or legal residents who are non-citizens.
The problem,
you know, there's like 50,000 people who, double up on that list.
And the problem really ultimately was twofold. One, it was exactly how you described it, where, look, there's actually any number of reasons, or actually quite a bit of legitimate reasons why someone might appear on both lists. Sometimes they had become citizens, different names and stuff. I mean, these are two departments of the government that don't really interface with each other. You know, there's going to be some mess. Yes. I think the problem was, one, that they didn't sell it that way. And so people thought, well, this must be the smoking gun. And if we find a single person who's a legitimate voter on this list, well, then the whole thing's discredited. Two, he releases this just days before he's set to be confirmed by the Senate, where Democrats actually had the power with their numbers this time to really block that confirmation. And that ultimately ended up being a problem. It was a good effort by David Whitley, by the Secretary of State, but something that was just completely muffed in the layout.
Yeah. Well, so I think the takeaway of that story, and we're headed into this year, 2020, with, 2020 elections, is it didn't get done. So the real takeaway here is, hey, everybody, you need to be super attentive to your local election administration. Well, thank you guys for going over these issues. Kind of interesting to walk through it, unpack it. And I'm looking forward to another year here covering the big
election season
that taxpayers need to know across the state. Thanks you. Thank you guys. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.